This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Luke Ford. We're going to be discussing the Harvey Weinstein scandal. Luke, it's great having you back on. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you, Robert.
And I'm also joined here with Joshua Zeidner.
Hi, Robert. Great to be on the show again.
So what has been sort of the latest news in the whole scandal? I haven't really been following the latest news, but I know there was some scandal that broke out about another filmmaker. You wrote about him on your website.
Yeah, the
James Toback.
Yeah, Los Angeles Times reported today that 38 women had come forward talking about how James Toback had done this familiar opening line that goes, you know, my name's James Toback, I'm a movie director, have you ever seen Black and White or Two Girls and a Guy? And then he'd keep dropping names. And then he says, you know, you look really good. I'd like to feature you in a movie, but first I need to get to know you intimately. Trust me. It's all part of the process. And then, like in a hotel room or a movie trailer or a public park, you know, these meetings that are framed as interviews, you know, turn sexual. And the guy, you know, usually ends up masturbating in his pants while looking at these women.
But yeah, what's the deal with that? Masturbating and right out in the open?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not familiar with that. Like, I don't know any friends who, like, masturbate to women they've just met. Like, you know, ask them to just stand there while they rub one out. You know, and like Harvey Weinstein, I guess, repeatedly did it in a potted plant. And he'd ask women to come watch him take a shower. I mean, that's kind of the opposite of how things are supposed to work. It's supposed to be, you know, the guy watches the woman. And it's weird that these, you know, fat, ugly old guys are, you know, just asking a woman to stand there while they rub one out in their pants. I mean, that's really beta. I mean, that's not alpha predatory behavior. That's like beta predatory behavior.
Well, isn't it kind of, you could say it's a way to show dominance?
Yeah, it is. It's like a beta way to show dominance. I mean, like, I try to live my life by the philosophy that I don't do anything I wouldn't want to see on the front page of the New York Times. So this is not behavior that I would want to see on the front page of the New York Times if I was engaging in it. I'd be way too ashamed to engage in this kind of behavior. Like, you know, I've hit some low points in my life, but I never hit anything like this, and it's also unfathomable to pretty much every guy I know. Like, every guy I know can understand a guy wanting to manipulate a woman into bed, but to manipulate a woman just standing there while you beat off into a potted plant, I mean, that's a whole level of degradation.
And Hold on. My question is, where are these testimonies coming from? And, you know, that particular one that you just brought up there regarding the potted plant, that was Harvey Weinstein, correct?
Correct.
Right. So did he admit to doing this? And I would assume no. And then we have to examine who is making these claims. You know, this happened with a lot more than just Weinstein. I mean, they were doing the same thing to Trump during, you know, the election process. There was at least, what, five or six women who came forward and said that he raped them.
Well, and nobody, no, I think ever there were like a dozen women who came forward and said he groped them. You know, there's a big difference between groping and raping. And no woman came forward and said you know, that they woke up to find, you know, Trump masturbating in his pants. Like, there's no allegations of Trump masturbating, you know, or asking, you know, women to watch him take a shower. I mean, I think Trump's too alpha to do that. So what Trump said in his famous video, that when you're a star, women will let you do anything to them, which is pretty much true. Like, when you're an alpha star, women, you know, particularly a certain type of woman, will let you do anything you want. Now, the behavior of James Toback and Harvey Weinstein is very beta. It's very different from, you know, having sex with a wide variety of women. These guys are getting written up for just having the woman stand there, you know, while they masturbate. I mean, that's...
Or even the claim of such. I mean, so far, there's been no... I mean, has anyone filed a formal... You're in law, if I remember correctly. So has anyone filed a formal... charge against Weinstein?
Yeah, there have been formal charges against Weinstein, and there have been investigations, and there have even been audio tapes where he admitted that he groped the woman. And,
oh, that was the one, was that the New York Post?
Yeah, I mean, so there have been formal charges against Weinstein, and now the FBI is investigating him. So, but this is behavior that goes back about 30 years. So generally speaking, in Hollywood, you don't talk out of school. You know, they're strongly discouraged because Hollywood's a fairly insular community, and it's a scary thing to make enemies, because people can hurt you and they can shut down your career.
Were you just a porn journalist, or were you also a Hollywood celebrity gossip columnist as well?
Well, I wrote a book about Hollywood movie producers, so I interviewed about 160 movie producers, and I've written about Harvey Weinstein's horrible behavior, though not with a specific emphasis on sex, but just that he was a horrible guy and very abusive was very well known in the industry. But I'll give you one anecdote, which I think is where this story I would hope would go. So back in December of 1998, I interviewed this videotape editor in the porn industry who talked about David Geffen and Barry Diller and you know, the homosexual gay mafia. And after I put that interview on my website, the hosting company that was hosting me was hacked, and I went off the air for a couple of weeks. They suffered about $40,000 damage, and the host of the website, who was also my boss and funding me at the time in December 1998, told me, "You have some very powerful enemies." So he booted my sites off his servers and completely severed his business relationship with me. And here's the interview that I did with this guy, Montel Bradford.
Is this in the book?
No, it's I didn't put it in the movie producer book. I put it on my blog, and this is what precipitated the hacking. So this is December 4, 1998, and Montel tells me, "I'm the nicest guy in the world. I have nothing against gay people, but I didn't want to blow the gay mob. Now, I do have a problem with people discriminating against people based on their sexuality. The gay mob employed the boys who are in the know. Now, Barry Diller is another huge mafia guy. He hit on me at the premiere of Grease." Greg Montel Bradford was a background dancer, and the Grease producer was my manager, and he was the one David Geffen told me that I had to blow. And so...
Like literally?
Are we talking about literally? So Montel tells me when you star in a major movie, guys like David Geffen come up to you and hit on you, say if you blow this guy, then you're going right to the top. So I'm basically blacklisted from the mainstream industry. And his real name is Greg Bradford, but in the adult industry he uses Montel Bradford, and he was in the TV series Facts of Life and in the movie Zapped. And he says his career was ended because he wouldn't blow the gay mafia. So I'm curious if the media is interested in probing the gay mafia in Hollywood, not just the straight mafia. Because
that was basically my take on the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, remember, and I really want you to finish what you're saying. It's very compelling and interesting information, by the way, Luke. There's also the story of Corey Feldman, and I'd really be interested to hear your comments on that as well.
Was it the scandal with Lou Pearlman?
No, according to him, Hollywood is absolutely crawling with pedophiles. you know, he's had incidents himself personally. He claims that, do you remember Corey Haim? You're maybe a little too young for that, Robert. But
oh,
I'm
yeah,
sure
Luke, about that scandal.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was, what Corey Feldman claims is that Corey Haim was raped, literally raped by a producer, and that led to his drug abuse and eventual death by overdose. And, I mean, you could just listen to anything that Corey Feldman says, and it sounds to me like Hollywood is just this totally immoral, like, Sodom and Gomorrah situation that's just crawling with immorality. I mean, from what I've heard about Weinstein, he's just pales in comparison to what's really going on. I mean, Weinstein doesn't seem like a pedophile, and right. apparently that's going on left and right.
So Hollywood. are you saying Weinstein is just like a sacrificial lamb, and there's other people much more powerful and...
More like a fall right. guy. I think he's more like a fall guy. You're like, let's take this guy. He's prone. It's very easy to blame things on him. And he's also not participating in anything that's... So far, nobody's accused him of anything really illegal, right? I mean, it just seems like improper conduct.
No, he has been accused of illegal behavior, and he has been criminally investigated, and the DA in New York chose not to bring charges. But he has been charged with illegal behavior, and Trump's FBI is... investigating him, and Corey Feldman was just recently busted for marijuana possession.
I saw that on the
news. He speaks out against sexual abuse Hollywood, and then he gets busted for marijuana possession. So the bust may be entirely on the up and up, or it may be manipulated by, you know, the gay mafia to warn people not to speak out against them.
Luke, would you say that Weinstein at his pinnacle was the most powerful producer in Hollywood?
Well, he's certainly in the top five, and he was very good at building the narrative. Like, he would hire journalists just to dig up dirt on the opponents of Bill Clinton in 1998, around the time of the Monica Lewinsky scandal. He hired this journalist, John Connolly, to do a book tentatively titled Insane Clown Posse. Basically, what John Connolly did is that he hired private investigators to dig up dirt on all of Clinton's biggest critics, such as Ann Coulter. So the book was never published, but that wasn't the point. The point was try to intimidate people. So Harvey Weinstein would try to buy off journalists by, you know, giving them book contracts and bribing them through these contracts. And he had all these writers kind of under contract for books that were never published, but that way he would have them under control and kind of doing his bidding. And so this is kind of how the narrative gets built in the mainstream media, that people like Harvey Weinstein, who has really been the king of prestige movies over the last 15-20 years, because he buys off the prestigious journalists, you know, gets them on his payroll and points them in the directions that he wants them to investigate while shielding his own bad behavior.
How would you compare Weinstein to people in the porn industry? Would you say the porn industry is much more honest and open about its nature as opposed to the secrecy of Hollywood?
Yeah, that's true. Like, I worked in Hollywood as a background player, so I worked as an extra on a lot of TV shows and movie sets in 1995-96, and I was also taking acting classes up to four nights a week. So I was, like, very much in that milieu. I had an agent. I went out for about 40 acting auditions. And just like the raw, animalistic, predatory sexual energy of this industry is just off the charts. Like, I was already pretty sexually obsessed, but this just absolutely lit my fuse. It just flipped my switch. Like, there was just so much raw sex in the air. Like, it was the powerful people, men obviously, you know, hitting on the beautiful young women who were, you know, trading their bodies to try to get ahead. And there was just all this, like, crazy, you know, intense, animalistic, jungle-like sexual energy and predatory, you know, like, sexual power comes not from the desire to make love to someone. Sexual power comes from a predatory urge. You can't really get excited unless you objectify someone. You're not gonna make crazy intense sex because you love the person so much. That there's a much crueler, it's a desire to debase, humiliate, degrade is what, you know, drives the strongest, you know, erotic impulses. And that was just, you know, all over Hollywood, from acting classes to just you know, parties in the industry to, you know, going on set. It was just prevalent. Now, as opposed to the porn industry, there it was completely different. It was like such a junior grade. It was people who were much less intelligent. It was much more open and honest, and there was much less, you know, behind the scenes going on. In the porn industry, it was pretty obvious what was going on. So it's like the porn industry was like going to a nudist colony, almost. Like, a nudist colony is not an erotic place, because, you know, with complete nudity, there goes the eros. But in Hollywood, there's enough of a tease going on. You know, people are dressed when you go on a movie set and when you go to parties. There's enough of a tease going on, and you just feel all these things moving behind the scenes, but you can't see them. While in the porn industry, you can see them. So the porn industry demystifies sex, but Hollywood just cranks up the intensity.
That's very fascinating, you know, set of statements there, Luke. I have to confess, you know, your insights to why porn is actually less sexy, so to speak, than Hollywood. I can tell you also, I mean, I grew up in the New York region, and the art world there, you know, either the fine art world or maybe things that happened post Warhol. I'm not sure if you can call that fine art, but it's virtually the same thing. It's you want to get ahead, that's how you do it. And there's not a single artist who didn't participate in that sort of thing, at least to some degree.
Right. When I was around Hollywood, 1994, 95, working as a background player fairly regularly, like, I was just driven to bang every chick that I could. It was just such a smorgasbord. There was just so much crazy, intense sexual energy. So it would not be uncommon for me to go on a set, and I hit on every girl on set who was also a background player. So I'd like hit on 15 girls, and 14 of them would reject me, but, you know, one would accept me, and so we would, you know, we would leave the set and we'd find a place to have sex. And, you know, I'd go to a party, and, you know, I'd hit on every girl at the party, and then as I'm walking out, this girl who had her eye on me would kind of come over, and I'd give her a hug, and, you know, then we'd end up, you know, going at it in the back of my car. While in the porn industry, being around the porn industry, it just sent me in the opposite direction. Like, I didn't hit on anyone in the porn industry. It was like a sewer, and I that's what completely stopped my promiscuity. It was like a reaction to the porn industry. Like, I no longer wanted to watch porn. I only wanted to form like a stable, long-term monogamous relationship. Other than that, I didn't want to fool around. Like, being around the porn industry sent me in the opposite direction than being around Hollywood did.
It's interesting, because it's kind of like, you know, you shed light on something like that, then it has a tendency to go away, right? I mean, something like Eros, as you call it, you know, can only really exist in a sort of shadow zone of our psyche. You know, if we really look and see what it is, it ceases to have any power, right? I mean, that's maybe a good way to explain it. Because if you see what, you know, what these sex acts actually are, and you witness them, you know, they cease to really have that much psychological pull.
Yeah, the power is in the mystique.
Right, exactly.
Right, imagine that you're with a woman, you have a romantic relationship, and then after a number of weeks, you start having a sexual relationship with this woman, and you adore her. You just adore her. And then she just happens to casually remark, you know, yeah, I've had 46 sex partners. I mean, how are you going to then have her on a pedestal? You know, you can't. You know, knowing 46 guys have plowed her prior to you, you can no longer have her on a pedestal. When, you know, when you find out that, like, three of your friends have banged her, you can no longer regard her as precious. Like you're...
Well, I think...
You can no longer, like, venerate this woman. And so, like... When you learn a little too much, it can just completely destroy the eros and the sanctity and you know, any veneration and respect that you have for the woman.
Sure, and oftentimes you find these kinds of understandings in the Jewish community and definitely the Muslim community. You know, the women, you know, and the men also seem to have some kind of understanding that sex and allure and romance are closely connected to, you know, what is being revealed, and as Robert said, this idea of mystique. You know, people have often commented that Arab women are oftentimes much more alluring than Western women, but it's mysterious because they reveal less, right? So what is going on there? You have to wonder. You know, is a Jewish woman more attractive to you than one of those porno stars with double D breast size? Probably, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, particularly when you've seen, you know, the porn star degraded and covered with another man's seed, you know, it's hard to, you know, she looks like a sewer. There's this movie, I remember, 1997 movie, Chasing Amy. And
yeah, I've seen that.
Ben Affleck falls in love with this woman, but he just has the hardest time getting over that she once had a threesome, you know, with two guys. And I mean, that's the same way for me. I could not have a relationship with a woman who's had a threesome with two guys. Like, that would just destroy any sanctity that I could afford our relationship and you know, any respect for her, because all I would see her in my mind is getting plowed by two guys at once. And it's like, no.
So you're saying both romantically and sexually, just with the raw physical aspect of it too?
Yeah, it's Eros is a tricky thing, and it can just be turned off just like that, and usually too much exposure will just destroy it. And so being around the porn industry was like such an overwhelming exposure that it made me want to contract my erotic life.
What's interesting is all these famous actresses are put up on pedestals. Young men see them as romantic ideals, and young women see them as role models. But I mean, you get the kind of a lot of Mercer articles. She makes the argument that they're basically a bunch of whores.
Yeah, I mean, how can anyone look at Jennifer Lawrence and not see her through the prism of that picture where she's covered with another man's seed all over her face?
Oh, yeah. What was that called? The fappening.
Yeah, the fappening. I mean, how can...
Also look at, like, how much those norms have shifted. You know, even as little as 50 years ago, like the idea of a picture surfacing with a woman with sperm in her face. I mean, that would be unbelievably scandalous for any woman, for something. I remember it was a big thing when those pictures of Marilyn Monroe surfaced, and they weren't even really, by today's standards, they were hardly anything. I mean, you can go, women post that stuff on Instagram every day. It was just big pictures of Marilyn Monroe naked that she... The story behind how they got those is kind of long. But anyway, my point being, look at how much things have changed and how much they've
degraded.
Well, there was
stuff about Hollywood going back to Marilyn Monroe writing about, I forget what she said explicitly, but she was talking about stuff like this going on.
Yeah, when she first got a contract, she was at a press conference and she said, well, I guess I've given my last blowjob, you know, now that I've gotten a contract. You know, I don't have to, you know, blow people to work as an actress anymore. So it seems to me that I don't think there's a male or female acting star out there who hasn't had to give blowjobs for it.
So you think every male there has engaged?
Yeah, that's my default assumption. I guess, you know, theoretically there's someone who hasn't, but my default assumption is every male and every female has had to give blowjobs to.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I remember, like, even actors that are thought of being as very manly, you know, you'll find out little details about it. I remember, like, Brad Pitt. This didn't go that far. You know, he confessed that he was actually bisexual, and that was maybe, like, 5 years ago or so, even while he was married to Angelina Jolie. And, you know, something like that just kind of, like, hits you. Like, you know, the image that they present of him as being this highly sexual ladies' man type, but then tells you that he's bisexual. I mean, how many people in real life do you meet like that? You know, if you met someone who's bisexual, typically you can figure it out fairly quickly.
Yeah. You know,
at least, like, think so. But
I remember I dated this photographer in the porn industry, Holly Randall, and she told me that she would never ever date any guy who was bisexual or any guy who'd even had anything in his butt. Like, any guy who's done anything in that arena, that just, like, wipes him off the map for her. You know, let alone she would never date anyone who'd been a porn star or posed naked. So she was a pornographer herself, but she had, you know, pretty normal standards as far as the type of guy that she would be willing to go out with.
It's interesting.
A lot of male porn stars do gay porn just as a way to make extra money.
Yeah, certainly they'll do some escorting. Because, like, the more sexually perverse you become, then the more, you know, the fewer limits you have, the fewer boundaries you have. And, you know, just an orifice does to become an orifice. And there's no longer, you know, the male-female distinction's no longer so important. And, you know, one angle I think that we should discuss on this, which is the most sensitive and the most dangerous, but I think we've got to discuss the Jewish angle on all this. Harvey Weinstein's a very prominent Jew. He was given an award by the Museum of Tolerance. Harvey Weinstein would speak out about how we have to get, you know, go mafia on anti-Semites. You know, Harvey Weinstein was very proud to put himself forward as a very proud Jew. Who's very concerned with Jewish interests, and Hollywood, we've got to be honest, is a disproportionately Jewish industry. As who was it? Joel Stein wrote in Los Angeles Times in 2008. Yeah, you know, Jews do run Hollywood, and there is something Jewish to the perviness of Harvey Weinstein. I completely agree with this Mark Oppenheimer essay for the Tablet, which is a Jewish publication. And the headline is "The Specifically Jewy Perviness of Harvey Weinstein." The disgraced film producer is a character straight out of Philip Roth, playing out his revenge fantasies on the goyim. And I think
I'm seeing a lot on Twitter and, like, on alt-right profiles is the posting those famous Nazi cartoons from the Julius Streicher publications. You know, the one of the. Yeah. Of the anti-Semitic caricature put in the fat man putting his hand around the blonde woman.
Mm-hmm. I saw that one. I'll give you my own personal opinion about this. Obviously, I'm somewhat active in these kinds of subjects, so maybe I have at least some level of credibility or authority on this. I think that, you know, Jewish is a very unique identity in that it has a kind of dual value. It's both a religious and a cultural identity. So somebody like Harvey Weinstein, I highly doubt, you know, he observes the Sabbath or eats according to kosher laws. However, he believes that he is Jewish. So, you know, he has this ability to identify with a religious group without actually adhering to any of the religious laws, which I'm sure, as we all know, include, you know, regulations about how you should conduct your sex life. So being Jewish gives you an extra kind of ability to be Harvey Weinstein and to be Jewish at the same time. For instance, there's no man on earth that's going to openly do the sort of thing that Harvey's doing and claim that he's Christian, because everyone knows if you're Christian, you're not allowed to do that. But there's no explicit conflict when someone does that and they're Jewish, because they can just claim the, well, I'm a secular Jew argument. So I think that is a lot to do with it. In fact, secular Judaism or Reform Judaism was invented in Germany, in Weimar Germany, not long before you know, the time of the Nazis. And perhaps some of these attitudes were in fact the thing that provoked, you know, the non-Jewish Germans to take out their problems with Jews.
Right. Well, the Weimar Republic was the height of sexual degeneracy. In fact,
right.
The last time that I remember in history that homosexuality was celebrated as much as it is today was in the Weimar Republic.
Exactly. Course, and in fact, many of our ideas, many of the concepts we inherit directly from that period in time, period in place. You know, the LGBT movement, all the early writings were almost all in German. And, I mean, I'll confess, many of those people, those early LGBT activists, were in fact Jews.
Yeah. And which is ironic in the sense of the Torah. And the Torah tradition has never been anything but completely opposed to homosexual behavior, you know, particularly
right.
for men. Like, it's just
you can't get any more blatant.
can't get any more anti-gay than Torah. And exactly. In fact, there are various places in the Talmud where it talks about the Torah portion of Noah. And why was the world considered so corrupt that God had to completely destroy it in a flood? It was because they had same-sex marriage. Like, that, when you take sin and you enshrine it as law, and you sanctify it as law, you recognize it legally in your judicial system as like a valid form of marriage, same-sex marriage, then you've come to a level of degeneracy and filth that is so intense that it's worth just like wiping the country, wiping the world off the map. And in fact, you'll have Orthodox rabbis who say no Jew can live in a land that has same-sex marriage, because just the degeneracy, the pause, is just so deep that it's just so filthy you have to get out. And so, you know, if democracy and the U.S. Constitution inexorably leads to same-sex marriage, which it seems to have done, then as an Orthodox Jew in particular, I've got to say I cannot stand with democracy. I cannot stand with the United States Constitution. There has to be some other way of ordering a society, because this is degenerate, this is pause, this is filthy, and it just, it's mind-blowing. And the Torah tradition is like completely opposed to, you know, homosexual sex, particularly for men. And then to find all these secular Jews, you know, pushing the way for gay liberation. And what has gay liberation given us? It's given us AIDS and all these other horrible diseases, hepatitis C outbreaks. It's just been an absolute disaster. It's been a public health disaster. Like, how many thousands of innocent people have been infected with HIV because of the filthy promiscuity of homosexuals? And what's amazing is that after the homosexuals gave us AIDS, then we gave them even more rights and more victimhood status, and now we even sanctify their marriages. It's just mind-blowingly filthy.
Well, I'll say this. I don't necessarily agree with all the positions that Luke just outlined there, but I will say this. Well, I mean, I just don't necessarily take a position on those things. It's just not of my interest. But I will say this. The points that he did say about Judaism and gay marriage, he's 100% correct. There is a centuries-old, perhaps millennia-old commentary on actual same-sex marriage. It is actually indicated in the Talmud. This isn't something that Orthodox Jews dreamed up, you know, to apply to contemporary political issues. It is in there. Same-sex marriage is mentioned in the Talmud. It's a fact.
Yeah, and one of the things that the Romans were praised for, there were three things that the Romans were praised for, and this is after the Romans had just killed about 1 million Jews in the struggle around the Bar Kokhba rebellion around 120 of the Common Era. So the Talmudic sages weren't really eager to praise Romans after, you know, this Holocaust of Jews, but they praised the Romans for three things, and one of them is that they didn't do marriage between men and men. And so once you do marriage between men and men, it's just an unbelievable level of filth. So, you know, Harvey Weinstein's behavior is completely contrary to Orthodox Judaism. It's completely contrary to the behavior of Orthodox Jews in general. In fact, most Orthodox Jews are virgins when they get married. And realizing that Orthodox Jews predominantly live in urban areas, they live in New York, Los Angeles, you know, Denver, they live in big cities, and yet they protect their children so that their children, you know, usually save sex until they get married. So, you know, sexual promiscuity is not a generalizable, you know, Orthodox trait. So the behavior of secular Jews like James Toback, Harvey Weinstein, and you know, 99% of Jews in Hollywood are not Orthodox. So, you know, their extreme sexual behavior, this extreme predatory behavior, this, you know, this gross behavior of masturbating into a potted plant, this is like so completely contrary to the Torah. And yet, at the other hand, we have to admit that when you're a secular Jew and you're not corralled by the Torah and by your fellow Orthodox Jews, and by, you're outside the Torah corral, and yet you'll also feel some distance from America because you're a Jew. And so America is not a Jewish country, even though Jews have developed a lot of power and influence in America. It's still a country that was created by white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. So a secular Jew is going to feel, in all likelihood, somewhat estranged from America, definitely estranged from Orthodox Judaism. So he's kind of in a no man's land. Most of his friends will be secular Jews. And so this gives
tremendous secular or non-Christian rights.
Yeah, this gives tremendous leeway for indulging in any, you know, any kind of vice that you want to indulge in, because you don't have an Orthodox community to tell you that's wrong. You know, your Reformed Jewish community is not going to judge you for you know, banging shiksas. And you also don't feel compelled by the norms that govern Gentile America, where, you know, this type of behavior is regarded as aberrant. So these men are in no man's land, and so that allows just this incredibly degraded and filthy behavior.
So with Weinstein, you're saying he was really politically active in Jewish causes, but also in general liberal causes as well?
Yeah, I mean, he was... I mean, Jews, by and large, in the Western world for the past 200 years have, by and large, sided with the coalition of the fringe against the white Christian core. I mean, what is the West? The West is white Christians. No, Christendom is white Christians. Now, you can make an argument that, that certainly some Jews belong in the West in the sense that they may have genetics that are more European than Middle Eastern. Also, they may primarily identify with their particular country of citizenship more than with their Jewish identity or with Jews worldwide or with the Jewish state. So there are plenty of, you know, millions of Jews in America who have more identification and loyalty to America than they do to Jews worldwide or to the Jewish state. And there are also millions of Jews in the West who are primarily a genetic makeup that is more European than it is Middle Eastern. So you can make an argument for some Jews belonging to the West, but by and large, the West is, you know, whites of Christian origins. That's who the West is. And by and large, Jews are alien to that. And by and large, Jews have sided with the coalition of the fringe, you know, with the homosexuals, the trannies, the blacks, you know, the disaffected, the angry, against that white Christian core. And so Jews have traditionally tended to vote on the left side of the political spectrum. And in their cultural contributions, they've tended to want to, you know, tear down the reigning white Anglo-Saxon Protestant mores.
The subversive Jew.
Yeah, because it's not weird. It's like any minority is going to feel some inclination to want to subvert the majority, because being a minority sucks. And you know, Philip Roth, I think, puts it really well, and he put it in Portnoy's Complaint, which is formed as a diatribe of Portnoy to his psychiatrist. And Portnoy says, "What I'm saying, doctor, is I don't seem to stick my dick up these girls as much as I stick it up their backgrounds, as though through fucking I will discover America." You know, in other words, shiksas are for practice. And in his book Operation Shylock, Philip Roth writes, "The radio was playing Easter Parade, and I thought, but this is genius on a par with the Ten Commandments. God gave Moses the Ten Commandments, and then he gave to Irving Berlin Easter Parade and White Christmas, the two holidays that celebrate the divinity of Christ, the divinity that's the very heart of the Jewish rejection of Christianity. And what does Irving Berlin brilliantly do? He de-Christs them both. Easter he turns into a fashion show, and Christmas into a holiday about snow. He turns their religion into schlock, but nicely, so nicely, the Goyim don't even know what hit them." And so, you know, Philip Roth realizes that it was the aspect of the Portnoy Complaint book that Jews found most upsetting was its revelation of this Jewish rage against the Gentiles. And this rage of a minority against the majority is not unfathomable. You know, most minorities have it. And so, you know, whenever you have a strongly identifying group, you will just naturally tend to develop negative feelings about outgroups. That's just how group identity works. It works the same way for Jews as for Christians, as for Muslims, or for Japanese, or blacks, or Mexicans. So Jews, by and large, tend to be highly ethnocentric, as opposed to those of Northern European origins, who tend to have the least ethnocentrism of any measurable group.
Well, hold on. Everything you're saying here, I think, is very much on point. But I think that there's a mysterious component that a lot of people don't look at. And again, it's this question of the definition of Jewish. You know, when we say that, you know, somebody like Harvey Weinstein is caught doing all these awful things, and they all want to say that he's Jewish. I mean, in what capacity is this person Jewish? Right? So underneath all of these assumptions, well, some of them come from religious sectors, some of them come from secular, even some genetic inferences are included in these judgments. when we look at, why do we say he's Jewish? Obviously, he's not Orthodox. What did he inherit this Jewishness from his parents? What if his parents were converts and they have more German in them than anything else? Does that make him Jewish? Well, you know, some of these people, certainly in the alt-right, you know, they do inherit and adopt all of these policies that came strictly from the Nazis. And a lot of these ideas, again, structure some of these forms of anti-Semitism, that there's an assumption that you're Jewish by inheritance. And certainly even the Orthodox will sometimes construct and foster that viewpoint. So if you have a child who's maybe astray and doesn't want to follow the commandments, he's still Jewish, if your mother was Jewish.
Well,
I don't.
Judaism is a national religion, so you don't have to believe in anything, you're still Jewish. I mean, that's how the ancient world worked. Every nation had its own particular religion. So Judaism is a people, and it's also a religion. It's a culture, and it's a religion. So if you're born of a Jewish mother, you're Jewish, no matter what you do, no matter what you believe. So, you know, belief in
God
is not a good thing for Jews.
Here's an odd thing. Admission into Judaism is an entirely religious affair, right? I mean, a rabbi, yes, somebody who's fully ordained, must say this person's Jewish because they did X, Y, and Z. And then suddenly that person's Jewish. Now, their kids say that they decided not to be Jewish, not to follow the command. Then they're automatically Jewish because their father.
Yeah, as long as you're born of Judaism goes by matrilineal descent, meaning through the mother.
Right.
If you're born of a Jewish mother, you're Jewish.
Yes. But it's a strange. My point is, Judaism has very unique aspects in that regard, and a lot of times people don't really analyze what the meaning of those rules are and how they actually pan out. You know, how it constructs a certain reality around us. And I think a lot of those ideas are what's responsible for, you know, Jews' unique character, like why they're often blamed for things in ways that other groups are not. Like, people will focus on Harvey Weinstein's Jewishness because these rules, like, what if, you know, some guy was a porn star and, you know, gave 50 people AIDS and his parents were Catholic? Do we blame Catholics for that? No, that would never, ever happen. But Harvey Weinstein, on the other hand, even though he may do it by his own volition, you know, he participates voluntarily in all of these actions, they will blame Jews for his actions. Why is that?
Well, because Jews celebrated Harvey Weinstein. They gave him awards. They were proud that he was Jewish. He had so much influence.
Luke,
Jews reinforce it. Certainly Jews are
culpable. Luke, didn't
culpable.
You say in your blog that one of the awards he got was still not rescinded?
Correct. The Museum of Tolerance is not rescinding its awards. And like, Harvey Weinstein was being celebrated in the Jewish community for decades, so we can't now say, you know, he's not a real Jew. I mean, he's very much a real Jew. And as far as, like, outsiders forming gross generalizations about Jews, that's what every group does about outgroups who are in trouble. Like, most non-Muslims hate and loathe Muslims because of the behavior of less than 0.1% of Muslims. Like, less than 0.1% of Muslims are, you know, actively engaged in or assisting terrorism. But because this tiny proportion of Muslims who are committing terrorism, you know, most sane non-Muslims don't want any Muslims around. And so, too, it goes with Jews. Even though a tiny number of Jews are engaged in this abominable behavior, like Harvey Weinstein, James Toback, now, even though only a tiny number of Jews are these left-wing, destructive, communist, you know, activists, so too, that just means that non-Jews, you know, just not going to have the energy to make distinctions. They just know that tremendous damage comes from these Jews, and therefore they just, you know, and sick and tired of Jews in general.
Luke, you linked to this article by Ilana Mercer from the UNS Review, but she kind of talks about the debate about the women as victims, or I forget how she words it, but you know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. She makes the point that, you know, these women, to call them victims is really stretching it, because they all, you know, wanted to use Harvey Weinstein or James Toback. They all wanted to use him to try to get ahead in Hollywood, and they were all, you know, willing to use their body and their charms, you know, to get work as actresses and they were quite willing to dress and behave in a way that objectified themselves. And so they were trying to use their sexuality to get ahead. Harvey Weinstein was trying to satisfy his sexuality, given that he had power. So they were both trying to use each other. So, you know, if a woman chooses to go to Harvey Weinstein's room in a hotel, you know, she's asking for trouble. If a woman, you know, chooses to isolate herself with a James Toback or a Harvey Weinstein, you know, she's deliberately putting herself in harm's way. It's just like, you know, a white person, you know, chooses to go for a jog on Martin Luther King Boulevard at 10 p.m. at night and is then shocked when, you know, he's mugged. Well, you put yourself in harm's way, Buster.
When did you first hear rumors about Weinstein's reputation? There are rumors going back at least till about 2012. I know Seth MacFarlane made that joke at the Academy Awards.
Right. So I started work on my book on Hollywood movie producers in the fall of 2001.
What's that book called?
It's called The Producers, Profiles in Frustration. And so starting then, you know, I'd hear some of these stories, but it wasn't just Harvey Weinstein. It was like I almost took it for granted that this was how it operated. And, you know, a person only has so much courage. Like, I've tackled a lot of controversial stories, but that doesn't mean I'm going to tackle every single one that comes up. You know, you get exhausted. But, I mean, I just took it for granted from just reading on Hollywood and being around Hollywood that this was exactly how Hollywood operated. I don't think it's unique to Harvey Weinstein and James Toback. I think, you know, people in Hollywood who have power, men who have power and don't act this way, you know, I think they are the outliers.
So you'd estimate that, like, the majority of actresses sleep to use sex to get ahead in Hollywood?
And actors, yeah. I just always kind of taken that for granted. And then we have this ridiculous orthodox actress Mayim Bialik, who wrote an essay making the case for modesty and how she always tries to behave modestly. Well,
what's interesting is she's orthodox, but she's also a feminist, which is fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, feminism has infected orthodoxy, but you know, she's a very plain-looking woman. No one's gonna sexually objectify Mayim Bialik. It doesn't require anything for a, you know, a plain woman to be modest. She has a lot to be modest about. So she kind of put herself forward, and, you know, and understandably got the backlash that she did, because, you know, no one wants to hear from some homely chick about the virtues of modesty.
So do you think that Mayim Bialik is, like, sincere, or do you think she's just, it seems to me like she's just kind of playing that position, like, I'm the voice of orthodox modesty?
No, I think she's absolutely sincere, and I think Harvey Weinstein was equally sincere when he jerked off into a potted plant. I mean, I think that was a very sincere ejaculation that Harvey had. Hang on, talk amongst yourselves.
Well, I mean, going back to what Luke was saying before, I mean, you look at some of the Moors in some Arab countries, and it's really interesting. I mean, in an Arab country, the rules are very, very strict. Like, you can't even touch a woman. There's really very few places to even interact with a woman you don't know personally or meet them. And certainly, you never go into any sort of secluded or private place with a woman who's not either your wife or your biological relative of some sort, which I guess kind of removes the possibility of a lot of these bizarre scenarios emerging. And you have to question whether or not who actually has it right. Is it us and our so-called liberties, or is it the Muslim world and their constrictions? You know, in the Jews are a lot like Arabs in a lot of ways. You know, they have very similar ideas. And Jews will often, you know, the similarities as far as how the genders are supposed to behave, there's many, many similarities, but typically the theme is Islam takes it further as far as the restraints on women specifically than Judaism does. For instance, Jewish women are expected to cover their hair after they're married. In Islam, women are expected to cover everything before they're even married, and more than just their hair, their entire bodies.
So your point is that if women were more traditional and conservative, it wouldn't enable individuals like Weinstein?
Certainly, if some of those laws were still in effect and, you know, people naturally questioned, why were you in that hotel room with Harvey? You know, and the questions started at that point rather than, you know, did this person touch this person's genitals or X, Y, and Z? I mean, just think about Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky and the amount of sheer deliberation that took place in determining exactly, you know, what went into where and who was touching what and what went on what dress. You know, in the Muslim world, they don't really have these questions. It's just simply, you know, were you with this person illicitly or not? And that's kind of where it starts and ends.
I think Ilana Mercer makes a great point in her essay. Liberalism and libertinism are intertwined. The more liberal a woman, the more libertine she'll be, and the more she'll liberate herself to be coarse, immodest, vulgar, and plain repulsive. Think of the menopausal Ashley Judd rapping lewdly about her menstrual fluids at an anti-Trump rally.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, the opposition to feminism seems to almost double daily. You know, I track, and I've discussed this on some of Robert's other shows, and you can check it on his website. The MGTOW movement, which is very interesting to me. I mean, women are getting apparently so repulsive to men that some men are just swearing off them completely. And these are young men, sometime late teens. You know, figured out by the time they're 16 or so that they want to actually have nothing to do with women whatsoever. These aren't homosexuals. These are men who don't want to participate in the so-called dating world.
Yeah, it's something that we largely get to avoid in Orthodox Judaism, because as I mentioned, most Orthodox Jews, when they get married, they're virgins. You know, you're usually getting married for life. You know, Orthodox Judaism, it kind of frowns on divorce, and so it certainly frowns on promiscuity, and it prohibits masturbation, obviously prohibits pornography, and just the kind of the vulgar libertine way that seems that so many women conduct themselves today, particularly in Hollywood.
Has there been a lot of talk in the Orthodox community about Weinstein?
No, I mean, none of his behavior certainly shocks us. Orthodox Jews, by and large, have a very realistic understanding of human nature.
You would say more so than religious Christians.
Yeah, they kind of take, you know, disgusting male behavior for granted, and you know, they try to elevate it within Orthodox Judaism, but they don't, you know, expect what's called a fry Jew, that's a, you know, a free Jew, a secular Jew, to, you know, to conduct himself like a mensch, like without a community to guide you, and without, you know, Torah to instruct you, then the human being is wild. And once the human being then has power, and then while still retaining a strong in-group identity, you don't have to be Orthodox to have a strong in-group Jewish identity. But, you know, once you're ethnocentric, once you have a strong in-group identity, it's very easy to just look at people in out-groups as cattle to be used. And, I mean, there was the same thing for Japanese in World War II, when they would take thousands of Korean women, you know, and forcibly enslave them as comfort women, and just, you know, their only purpose in life is now to sexually satisfy our troops, because Japanese, like Jews, tend to be highly ethnocentric. And what goes with having that strong in-group identity is that you tend to have a lot of negative feelings about out-groups, and therefore it becomes easier to use them.
In fact, Japan's citizenship policy is one of the few in the world that resembles Israel's.
Yeah.
As in, if your parents are Japanese, if your parents were Japanese citizens, doesn't matter where you were born, you can also declare your Japanese citizenship at any time in your life.
Yeah, there's another side to this too. Like the word shiksa, like its literal meaning is very negative. You know, that it's a slut. You know, that it's a non-Jewish woman who's sexually promiscuous and a loathsome creature. But words don't just have a denotative meaning; they also have a connotative meaning. You know, how are they used? And from my 30 years in Jewish life, most of the time that the word shiksa is used, it's used either neutrally or positively. So the other, you know, sexual dynamic here is that a lot of Jewish men, you know, sexually idealize non-Jewish women because they find Jewish women so ball-busting and so difficult because, you know, it's always...
I'm not sure about that one, Luke. So,
well, like, let me just finish the point. It's always a little more challenging to deal with your own group because you guys know each other so well. Likely, you know, their sister or their cousin or their boss or... Cause, you know, tribal life is so intertwined. So it's easier to objectify and fantasize about women that you don't know well, such as non-Jewish women. So, you know, I know a lot of Jewish guys who have frustrations dating Jewish women, and so they then go on to, you know, imagine and to fantasize, oh, you know, the non-Jewish woman must be so comparatively pleasant and easier to deal with. So, yeah, shiksa can have a negative meaning, but overwhelmingly, as I've heard it in used in Jewish life, it either has a neutral meaning or a positive meaning.
Well, I think the word itself, and we don't really have to go deeply into this. I mean, whenever you see in Hebrew that shin cuff, that's typically has a negative connotation. Like the word for lie, for instance, is sheker. And the word for, I think, destroy is shoket. So, you know, I tend to think it's kind of like saying... you know, the word shitty is not really have a negative connotation. So, I mean, your other points, I think, are fair, too. I think you kind of laid out the reasons, the psychological reasons why, you know, the Jewish Orthodox male might end up with a non-Jewish woman.
Yeah, well, although it's not always. The Orthodox Jewish male will end up with a non-Jewish woman, generally speaking, though you will find, you know, you will find Orthodox Jewish men who will be proud to tell you that they're banging their shiksa secretary. You know, they want you to know. I mean, this is very much an aberration. This is very much a minority. But you will find this kind of gauche, you know, behavior even within Orthodox Judaism. But there, you know, the gauche phrase is, you know, shiksas are for practice. You will not find Orthodox Jewish men marrying non-Jewish women. So it's more secular Jewish men who are more likely to marry out with a non-Jewish woman.
Luke, do you want to comment on Harvey Weinstein's personality type?
Well, it's just like the nebbishy, you know, beta type. It seems like most of the, you know, most famous Jews in Hollywood, like Harvey Weinstein or the Jews who run the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center and even AIPAC, you know, seem really beta, as opposed to the leading Israeli politicians like Benjamin Netanyahu or Yitzhak Rabin. I mean, these were alphas. Viktor Lieberman, the Jewish defense minister, is very much an alpha Jew. But, you know, Harvey Weinstein was this kind of repellent, you know, nebbishy, kind of loser guy that, unless he was so, you know, rich and famous and powerful, you know, no woman would want to get, you know, within 10 yards of him.
Do you think he's acting out in eroticized rage from past rejections?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's trying to work through the trauma of his childhood. I'm not sure what's made him the way he is. Like, every trait comes with good sides and bad sides. So, generally speaking, Jews tend to be very aggressive, not violently aggressive, but just verbally aggressive. And so this aggression enables Jews to accomplish great things, to push their ideas forward, to be great lawyers, to innovate in science and technology and in business. But it also has a dark side, and Harvey Weinstein's deplorable behavior is kind of the dark side of this Jewish form of aggression. So Jews, by and large, tend to be much more open than say, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, tend to be much more emotional, tend to, you know, wear their feelings on their sleeve much more, and to be much more blunt and crude or just honest, you know, from a Jewish perspective in discussing life. But from a you know, a white Northern European perspective, this will come across as unbelievably crude and gauche, which was kind of the reason that Jews were kept out of many dining establishments and hotels, because, you know, the goyim wanted to be able to, you know, eat dinner without hearing about, you know, pussies and breasts and, you know, dicks and vaginas. You know, Jews tend to be very blunt, and I like that. Like, I like Jewish bluntness. I like Jewish honesty. You know, I often find kind of the nice Protestant thing, I kind of find it, you know, fake. But I can understand why many non-Jews are put off by, you know, the bluntness of Jews, the very intense emotional displays of Jews, because Judaism is a legal religion. It requires certain behavior that enables you to be much more free in what you say, what you're thinking, and what you're feeling. While, you know, Protestantism is a religion entirely of the heart. And so if you're ever to, like, vent your anger, it shows that you're not saved. So, you know, Protestants, by contrast to Jews, are very controlled people. So I like Jewish openness. I like Jewish honesty. I like Jewish emotion. But I can also understand why, you know, non-Jews feel disgusted or frightened or repelled by Jewish emotional intensity. And Harvey Weinstein kind of shows you the dark side of Jewish emotional intensity. And you know, there are many potted plants that still, you know, bear the price of Harvey Weinstein's Jewish emotional intensity.
We are getting close to the end of the show, but Luke, what do you see as the aftermath of all this?
Well, I think that we would continue to get expose after expose, and as Jews do form the majority of the power positions in Hollywood, you know, I kind of think this is going to red pill quite a few goyim into perhaps a more skeptical view of Jews. I really don't see much of an upside to Jews from this. I think you're going to find more and more predators disproportionately Jewish being exposed in Hollywood, and I hope that the exposure goes to the Hollywood gay mafia too, which is disproportionately Jewish. And even though I'm Jewish, I want these predators outed. I want them humiliated now, and I want their predatory behavior stopped. So, you know, I welcome these exposés.
Luke, it's been an excellent show. I'd like to thank you for being on.
Yeah, great to talk to you again, Robert.
And also, thanks, Joshua Zeidner.